my parents were taking me on my first trip to Europe, but it was also a trip halfway around the world. And so I went ahead so that I could have time in Paris. And the first thing I did was go to Balenciaga and Givenchy. And I went to a Sacred Heart convent for 12 years and wore the world's most hideous uniform. But I did find that dressing in a uniform made life pretty easy. And his clothes, I'm not going to say were like uniforms, but there was a distinct style, but they were so wearable, and you knew you'd wear them forever. So I've always felt that I would rather have a few very good things rather than a lot of not so great.
When you think of fashion, what is the first image that pops into your mind? Is it pastels, neon, neutral tones? Is it striking lines, tailored cuts? Is it lace, zippers, or feathers? Is it beauty? Is it mind-boggling? There is a generation of fashion founders that have made everyday clothing and the modern perspective of fashion possible. One of those meticulous founding fathers was Hubert de Givenchy. When medical philanthropist and fashion icon Dita Blair met Hubert, she wouldn't realize she was meeting a lifelong friend.
It was an apartment building. And he was on the floor, surrounded by fabrics, and the music from the Audrey Hepburn film was playing. And it was just instant admiration. And we worked on a suit. I'd been to Balenciaga, and I bought a wonderful coat, all sold. I had it made for me, and it was wonderful. And he was so attractive, you cannot imagine. It was the beginning of a wonderful, enduring friendship.
Dior, Balenciaga, Chanel, Givenchy, today, these are the brands we recognize, but they are more than the labels inside expensive clothing. They were the founders of haute couture and the architects of modern fashion. We're going to take you to the Maison de Givenchy from its incarnation. But before we strut through those gilded gates, let's get to know a bit more about this couture visionary. Welcome to A Life Lived. I'm Stephanie Okupniak. Hubert James Marcel Tafon de Givenchy. If you met someone with that name, would you be surprised to know that he came from aristocratic stock? He was born in 1927 in Beauvais, France. His father, Lucien, died when he was 3 years old. So Hubert and his brother were raised by their mother, Beatrice, and their grandmother. Hubert studied art, although he briefly considered studying law. He was 17 years old, and though law would have been a more sensible choice, Hubert's dreams were costumed in decadent fabrics and elegant embroidery. The couture industry in France was not fashionable. It was labor-intensive and badly paid. It was utilitarian and militant. It wasn't glamorous or artistic. There wasn't time to experiment with fabrics and cuts between sewing hems and measuring inseams. But Hubert couldn't imagine doing anything else. He worked with several impressive designers and learned the stitch and bow of the trade. While refining his craft, he bumped into Christian Dior at a party. Hubert was a great admirer of his work, and it took every ounce of courage to invite him to lunch. He was honored when the designer accepted his invitation. Across the table, Hubert leans in and admits, "I want to open my own atelier." Dior replies, "That's very brave of you to do at your age. But youth gives one a bravery that weakens with age." Wealthy people were becoming more flamboyant, buying boats and second homes. And with each luxury, an appropriate wardrobe would need to be worn. Hubert was enjoying his youth, attending parties and dancing with wide-eyed ladies with deep pockets who would whisper in his ear a request for a dress. He was always happy to oblige, but the requests were relentless and he needed funding to open his workshop. Hubert's friend gave him the seed money and the Maison de Givenchy was born in February 1952. Just in time for the fashion show season. Hubert's focus was on separates. He wanted to be able to mix and match different items of clothing to accentuate a look. A belt, a glove, a hat, a necklace could turn one look from casual to extravagant. There was a quality to clothing back then, a craftsmanship that made every piece immortal. Each item of clothing was meant to uphold the dignity of the wearer. A stray thread or a missing button would be an embarrassment to the designer.
You know how irritating it is when a button comes off or, you know, a hem cascades down or something like that and something has to be fixed. Couture things seldom had to be fixed in any way. They didn't come apart. Hooks did not come off, that kind of thing. Snaps worked. And it's just about quality, really.
When it came time to present this new concept to Paris fashion, Hubert ran out of funds. At the time, fashion houses would present their new lines over 3 days at scheduled times so you could book to see them at your convenience. The models would wear the same items each time, so you would be guaranteed to see the same look as the audience the day before. Hubert couldn't afford to rent the space or hire the models for that time. Instead, he asked his friends and the top models to present his new line just once. This was unheard of. But the next day's headlines were, "A star is born," and the modern-day fashion frenzy has never looked back. Hubert built his career, elevating textiles with simplicity.
There was a certain style of simplicity, but made in the most beautiful fabrics. I think fabric is where it begins, and I think that's obviously the way the couture works. And I know he always, you know, way before a collection, went to Italy, went to other places in France, and he worked with the fabric designers. And whether it would be a heavenly tweed, whether it would be velvet or it was a wonderful fabric, much used for evening dresses, gazar. He worked alongside of these fabric houses, doing things for his own collections, developing prints and stripes and thinking in terms of themes. So they were very, it was a very personal style. And the simplicity attracted me. He saw clothes, how they would move. He also, both he and Balenciaga, they had certain unique and beautiful details. Collars curved away from the neck. They were not flat. And his clothes were so easy to wear. And he understood what people needed in their wardrobes. And that some of his clients, like me, wanted to keep wearing them for a long time. There were fabric designers who he adored, and I must say I loved their fabrics, Gustav Zumsted, Susie Gandini. And there was a place in Paris that was unique. I never can remember the name of it. It was something like Brumaire or Sache. And they made mostly silks, but they used natural dyes. And he really worked with them on prints and things so that they were uniquely part of his collection. Also, he was never trendy. There was nothing ever flashy. Should we say his clothes did not shock, but an evening dresses would be astonishingly beautiful.
Audrey Hepburn knew of Hubert de Givenchy and asked him to do the costumes for Sabrina.
It is late at night, and someone across the way is playing La Vie en Rose. It is the French way of saying, I am looking at the world through rose-colored glasses.
And it's he thought Katharine Hepburn requested him. When they met, Hubert explained he had no time to build her a new wardrobe, but she was welcome to the pieces he had already made for his collection. The classic suit and iconic white gown she wears in the film were all from that collection, even though he was not credited in the film.
Quand il me prend dans ses bras et me parle tout bas.
Credit or no, his clothing was instantly recognized and admired. From then on, Audrey insisted on Hubert designing the clothing for most of her films, including the iconic black dress in Breakfast at Tiffany's. Audrey and Hubert would become such close and distinct friends, their relationship could be equal to a classic love affair. She inspired him. Even when his brand branched out into homewares and fragrances, you can sense her influence. In 1957, Hubert teamed up with his brother to design the fragrance L'Entendu. Hubert immediately asked Audrey to be the face of the scent, knowing people around the world would want to smell just like their icon. Anytime Audrey needed anything, Hubert would appear in a flash, and she was only too happy to do the same for him. Audrey said wearing Hubert's clothes was like wearing armor, because they protected her and made her feel confident. And she wasn't alone. Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, Princess Grace of Monaco, Duchess of Windsor, and Dita Blair all felt the same.
If I was wearing a wonderful Givenchy suit or something, it gave you a confidence you didn't have to worry about how you looked.
Hubert wanted to celebrate women. He made the conscious effort to design clothing so it elevated the person wearing it. You may compliment the outfit, but it wouldn't look good if the person wearing it wasn't glowing. He said, it's easy to create clothes with an effect. They are the ones applauded at fashion shows. Personally, I usually prefer a simple jersey suit that one barely notices, whose beauty reveals itself gradually. Givenchy's name had become synonymous with Parisian chic. He partnered with Balenciaga to introduce a new silhouette for women. The jackets and blouses shed their waistlines, allowing a more loose form for the wearer. The new look was called the sack, and women loved it. Hubert enjoyed evolving his look with current trends. The 1960s brought shorter hemlines and straighter designs into the pieces.
When you went to a couture collection in the 60s and the 70s, they were held in the Maison de Couture, and they were silent. There wasn't music. The models walked out carrying a number. You didn't have this celebrity culture. You didn't have a horde of press. I mean, it would be perhaps 60 women and sometimes their husbands in a room, and it was quiet, broken by occasional, you know, applause when something was dazzling. But it was a totally different atmosphere. And I would say the clothes were certainly more distinguished, more subtle.
Style is a very personal expression, and Hubert celebrated it and made it special.
He would also let you occasionally personalize something. I'll never forget my favorite dress of all time was one of his. And it was in the collection, and it was a strapless dress of white peau de soie. And in the back was it was like wearing an apron in the back that was peau de soie covered by black pointe de spree. And I looked at it, and I thought, this whole dress should be the peau de soie with pointe de spree. So I asked if he was upstairs, and he came down, and I said, this is the way I see this. He said, what a good idea. He said, but I have another idea. And he asked someone to bring down the black velvet ribbon. And he just put this tiny strip of black velvet ribbon at the top of the strapless dress. And it just, I think I wore it forever. And you could, I once had it FedExed to Paris, and it arrived without a crease. It was just amazing. I was suddenly included at a wonderful ball in the city of Versailles. And so he was familiar, and my life was sort of serious, and I needed suits and coats and looking quite together. And he came down one year. He said, Dita, I think it's time to be a bit more sportif. Let's do cashmere sweater and skirt and coat instead of the coats and dresses and suits. And he'd often bring something to my attention. So there were times when something would really be made very personal for you.
Hubert's maison was a sacred place for him, for his staff, and the people who were ordering the clothes.
There was never any sign of disorder. Everything was very orderly. And he knew how to interpret the times as well. Even his tailoring was feminine. There was a softer quality. You would never see huge shoulders that are going to be in one year and out the next. You just saw beautiful, soft, feminine tailoring. It's great. I mean, they would never sell the same dress to someone in the same city. And they were very careful about, you're not going to see yourself coming and going, you know, the way you do with, frequently with ready-to-wear. If the dress was in any way complicated, they would make a toile, sort of white muslin, and they would do that before cutting the fabric. I was very lucky in that I frequently could fit the models, and you could reserve them, get them a little bit late, but at a very advantageous price. But if I ordered something to be made, I usually only needed one, maybe two fittings. There were women who would have three or four fittings. And you always went for a final fitting that was always perfect. And the only thing is, a lot of people don't have the time for that or don't care about it. But it does make a difference when something is made for you.
Now we're going to be visited by a few sponsors you may want to try on for size. But when we come back, we'll hear about how a workaholic handed in his scissors and his sewing kit for a pair of pruning shears. Now, I can't speak for Hubert de Givenchy, but I'm pretty sure a man with such impeccable taste would be a fan of our sponsors today. Just as he was at the forefront of fashion, Beer 52 are beer pioneers. They work with small batch breweries from all over the world to bring you hoppy IPAs, crisp lagers, and silky stouts from places like New Zealand, South Africa, and of course, France. As the world's largest beer club with over 175,000 active members, you're in very good hands. And we've got a free case of 8 craft beers with your name on it. All you have to do is pick your poison and cover the £5.95 postage. I can see Hubert sat with a Ninkasi Noir, a sweet, smooth beer with coffee and chocolate notes, inspired by a 19th century brown beer brewed in Lyon. But why Beer 52? You know what? That's a very good question. Well, as a member, each month you'll be sent a case with a different, expertly curated theme. And that's not it. You'll also get a magazine and a snack. That's right, people, snacks! And I don't know if you've noticed, but virtual drinks require snacks. It's very awkward to get up in the middle and start popping popcorn while you're trying to have a conversation or listen to cool music. So why not just cut out the middleman and have Beer 52 provide that for you? That's a great night in. And if you don't like dark beer, no problem. You can choose a light option. I mean, who wants to wait at a bar anymore? Why not have the convenience of amazing selections at your fingertips? And the best thing about Beer 52 is that there's absolutely no minimum commitment. I mean, if you want, you can just take this free case, try the beers, and if you decide it's not for you, you can pause or cancel your subscription at any time. So honestly, what are you waiting for? Go to www.beer52.com/lived and get your free case of 8 beers. That's the word beer and the number 52.com/lived. It's a perfect night in. In 1961, Dita got engaged and began planning her nuptials. Hubert didn't design her dress, but he couldn't let one of his closest friends walk down the aisle without crowning her beautiful face.
I will say he was very gallant in that when I became engaged to my husband, I was in New York at a party and Diana Vreeland was there. And we met for the first time and she said, "I've been thinking about you." She said, "I've decided you must wear a pale blue wedding dress." And however, I remembered a marvelous thing I'd seen on a mannequin's head. You know, they often would show little black dresses, but with extravagant hats or confections on their head. And I'd seen one at Givenchy. So I went across and explained to Hubert that I had ordered the pale blue dress across the street. But would he do the approximation of a veil? It wasn't a veil. It just sat on the back of my head and floated around. He said, "I will do it with pleasure as a present," which was charming.
Hubert was a romantic, both in his profession and his personal life. His partner, Philippe Venet, was also a fashion designer and launched the Maison de Vinet in 1962.
He is a charming man. And I think he was a very talented designer. I helped a friend pick out quite a lot of clothes that Philippe did, and he made beautiful things. I always found it was easier to sort of stick with, you know, one or two houses. For me, it was Balenciaga and Givenchy, and you could wear a Givenchy dress under a Balenciaga coat, etc., etc. And so I had one or two coats from Philippe, and they were great. But he is a lovely man. They were both very interested in food, and you had delicious, absolutely delicious menus. And I don't know whether that was Philippe or Hubert or both of them saying, "Shall we do this?" And they were very arrangé. They were very easy together. It was a very long, long partnership.
Givenchy had taken Paris by storm, was admired on the silver screen, and dressed hundreds of ladies who were lucky enough to travel to his maison. Now he was overwhelmed with requests to expand into America, and he was happy to respond. In addition to opening shops, he also began to expand his love of fabric into new ventures, as well as play with our senses.
When he came to America and he designed a collection or two of fabric, and he did a collection of sheets and all of that, I think he did it because he wanted the ability to buy the most beautiful antiques and rare and unusual objects. And he was focused on that, and he was focused on his work. And, I mean, I understand that making a perfume is a lot of work and a lot of time. And he made, what, three or four perfumes. My husband wore one of his for men.
Hubert was a sophisticated man, and he presented himself and his company with dignity and honor. His loyalty to his friends allowed him the opportunity to indulge occasionally, and even be a bit silly.
I do have a really funny memory, which was a dinner for about eight people, maybe six or eight. And the first course was totally amazing. It never happens in the United States. It was truffles en croûte, and each one had a whole truffle wrapped in, you know, puff pastry, and it was passed and great. And then it came a second time, and I realized afterwards I was the only one who had taken the second one, and Hubert said, "I will join you, Dita." I think he was only doing it to make me feel less greedy.
Hubert was a consumer of style and inspiration. He loved architecture, landscape, texture, art, beauty. He would go to museums, exhibitions, concerts, castles, and gardens and soak everything in. He would collect pieces and display them proudly in his home. While the world collected Givenchy Couture, Hubert was collecting the world.
He was a passionate collector, and that was a very, very important part of his life. And he had extraordinary taste in houses and rooms. And he bought beautiful furniture, and then he'd see something better, and he would upgrade. And it was always very interesting. He would combine extraordinary pieces of 17th, 18th century furniture and wonderful objects with contemporary paintings and contemporary carpets. And he loved collecting. I mean, his great concentration on works of art. Unlike today, where people, particularly of new wealth, do it to show off. You know, whether they buy a Jeff Koons or a this or that. It's to show off, I think. He was a passionate collector because he was interested in the history and the quality, and he cared about beautiful things. But they were never, he wouldn't, you'd come in, he'd never say, you must see my new bronze or my new this or that. I mean, if you knew him, you spotted something that was added. But it was because he loved the subject.
In 1988, Hubert sold his maison to Louis Vuitton Moët Hennessy, also known as LVMH. He continued to design for 7 more years and retired after he presented his final collection in 1995. With the fashion founder away, the brand began to descend into je ne sais quoi.
It has lost its magic in a way. And I think there's too much going on in today's fashion compared to. It was more about the structure, and fashion was more about a silhouette. And there were fabrics used then which don't exist now. So it was a different time, the 60s and 70s, and in the 80s it began to change a bit. I think it went through such a dramatic swing from what he did to when Galliano, for example, did the collection. And the whole mood of the house changed. But I think he's not going to sit and sit around and complain about how dreadful things are, or how, you know, he isn't that kind of person. That's not what he's about. He has so many really deep interests.
When a man retires, people expect him to relax and take up a hobby. Givenchy spread his creative roots and got ambitious. Gardening.
He was just simply very visual minded. So anything that was beautiful and interesting and gave him pleasure and gave him fun. And I think also later when the couture house was closed, his fun was about accomplishing things, projects. I mean, he kept doing amazing things in the gardens at Jonchée. Then he, together with his great friend Bunny Mellon, they embarked on the restoration of the Potager du Roi at Versailles. And that was years of work and study, and it was totally an amazing project. And it would not have happened without him and without Bunny, so I think that's where his pleasure came from. He became, I think, probably always interested in gardens, but he became a passionate gardener. And he was someone, you might say, collected ideas for gardens. At Jonchée, he has incredible, huge circles of low boxwood hedging. And he was thinking about that. We were in Venice, and this was the garden at San Giorgio, which was then the Cini Foundation. And he went over and talked to the monks or priests and asked permission if he could copy it. And there are pictures, you know, all over you can see of this amazing parterres of boxwood. He later did a series of different vegetable gardens, and those were from Mount Vernon. And as I said, when he and Mrs. Mellon worked on the Protégé de Moi, this was studied. They both collected 17th and 18th century botanical books and any books on gardens. And all of the techniques used then were used again to recreate this. And those are the things that gave him pleasure. And I won't say they were an obsession, but they just captivated him. And he would talk to his friends about them.
The last time Dita saw Hubert was after she had traveled to Florence to see an exhibition. She popped into France to see him. You ask me? That's a good friend.
I had just come from Florence, and where there was an amazing Bronzino show. And I brought him the catalog, and he was so happy. And you know how museums used to always have hardback copies, you know, that made it a slightly nicer present. And I just said, I wish I could have it bound for you, but there's just no time. And he said, no, 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 I'll take care of that. But it was a great success. It's always difficult to give a present to someone who has everything. We had a wonderful friendship. And if you think about it, it was, somewhere between 50 and 60 years that we knew each other. We were always in Venice at the same time in the summer. And I'd see him at the time of the collections. And usually whenever I was in Paris, we would have lunch. I also went to Jonchée two or three times. And we were very good friends.
Givenchy spent his formative years relaxing at his country estate with Philippe.
Jonchée was a very tranquil and serene place. If you went for a weekend, you'd stay in bed rather late reading, and then you might meander upstairs and you'd find Hubert sketching, or Philippe, you know, reading, and it was very serene. And then long walks in the most beautiful woods. And then always to see something new that had been done in the garden.
Hubert died on March 10th, 2018. He was 91. The work of Hubert and the Maison de Givenchy is often displayed in museums and exhibitions around the world. It is on display on women who feel slightly elevated in their armored couture. He will forever live on in Audrey Hepburn's smile, Princess Grace of Monaco's silhouette, and across the shoulders of Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis. If you dream in fashion, he'll be there to open the gilded gates and invite you to strut in.
A person of many worlds and many interests. And I think he approached all of them with a sense of extraordinary quality. He's highly civilized, disciplined, and just exceptional in so many ways. So I think his legacy has to do with accomplishment and with great taste. And it's difficult to describe someone who was so visual minded and surrounded himself with beauty that he did get translated to a larger world.
Dita Blair is a medical philanthropist, a fashion icon, and a social mover. And she still wears many of the timeless, original Givenchy pieces he made for her. Next, on A Life Lived.
Bruce came down at that time. He had a little Porsche. Worst driver in the world, by the way. Greatest athlete, greatest martial artist, greatest film fighter of all time in martial arts, but the worst driver. I'm absolutely worst. You drove with him, you knew your life was on the line. And he'd be looking at you while he's driving, and you'd be shoving his face towards, you know. But anyway, that was funny.
Ironic, isn't it? That the greatest martial artist movie star in history got his break playing the Green Hornet's driver, Kato. We spoke with his friends, colleagues, and partners, Bob Wall, Leo Fong, and Patrick Strong, about the methods, the philosophy, and the life of Bruce Lee.
This is an Audioboom original production by Muddy Knees Media and Breaking Stereotypes. This podcast was presented and executive produced by me, Stephanie Okukiak. Our series editor has been Lucy Oliva. If there is an icon that you would like to know more about, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram using the handle @alifelived_.